thank you everyone for dropping into Modern Manhood Cold Takes, or just Cold Takes. We don't call it Modern Manhood Cold Takes. This came from Modern Manhood, but I think we should just call it Cold Takes. This is the Next Gen Men's podcast about just timely events that are happening in our society and with the way we talk about things, especially through a view of masculinity and gender. Our guest today, so my name is Fernando Villegas. I'm one of the producers of Modern Manhood. My guest is the executive director of Next Gen Men, Jake Sticca. Jake, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. It's always a pleasure to be on Modern Manhood or Cold Takes. Or just in general involved with the Next Gen Men podcast network, because there's a few different podcasts in the mix that we love supporting.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, of course, if you are a listener of Cold Takes, you know about Modern Manhood, but you also should know about Breaking the Boy Code. You should also learn about Oreja Peluda, our Spanish language masculinity podcast. And you should also check out even just the old episodes of Masculinity, which our producers, Ramon Phillips and Samantha and Ceci did before, and I think want to bring up again. So we have four amazing podcasts in our podcast network. So make sure you check that out. And before we even start Cold Takes, I have to say that this cannot be done, meaning doing this podcast, doing this network in general, this cannot be done without our members. See, Jake? I said it. I did it just for you, okay? I've been having a long-standing conversation about how that word is awkward, but I did it because I feel kind today. So I have to shout out some names here. Justin Walford, Betty Illich, Dylan Howard, Steve Garrett, and Helen Rendell. Thank you. Thank you so much for being part of the Next Gen members, because without you, we can't do this. And without you, we can't support a community that's shaping what masculinity is in the future. So thank you again.
And also, special shout out to Betty Illich for being the mother of Veronica Illich, yes, who you've seen on Cold Takes before. Not only do you support Next Gen Men, you gave us one of our employees, and we're forever grateful.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Without you, we don't have Veronica, and that is very, very important. And of course, you do much more than just birthing children. So
100%.
So shout out to you specifically, as well to shout out to the Alberta Podcast Network that also supports Modern Manhood, has supported Modern Manhood for the last 5 years. They're a locally grown, community supported network, have done a lot of amazing stuff. Specifically, just recently in Alberta, we just had the Alberta elections, the municipal elections, and they did a lot of work, a lot of podcasts through that as well too. So shout out to the Alberta Podcast Network for that. Okay, so Cold Takes is about talking about things that are in the news or things that we want to talk about that are timely. Let's first talk about the thing that has gotten us in good feels, I would say. Let's talk about Ted Lasso. Let's talk about this show that has really galvanized this conversation about masculinity in a way that not many other shows have in a long time, I would say. Would you say that?
100%. I mean, I think the reason that it's galvanized this conversation is so often when it comes to masculinity, and you and I have been doing this for years, it used to be masculinity equals toxic masculinity.
Exactly.
And I think that we've started to move away from that conversation, and we've been looking for the next horizon of that conversation. And rather than having conversations around what men and boys shouldn't be, let's give them role models of what they should be or could be. What are the possibilities? What are we aspiring to be? And I think that Ted Lasso has really been filling that void that a lot of people have been feeling about this. And I know, I've been getting DMs about, yo, this is like Next Gen Men, but real.
Yeah, totally.
Even though real. It's a fictional TV show and we're real, but,
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the first season came out and a lot of people kind of like took it by surprise and just like, hey, this kind of weird show about this guy coaching a soccer team that's from America. It was supposed to be kind of this fish out of the water thing, but it really showed like the humanity of the people that were involved, including Jason Sudeikis, who plays the main character, Ted. But also other, like it also showed the humanity and the complexity of what masculinity is. not only with Ted, but also with the other characters like Brett Goldstein's Roy Kent and Jamie, and even somebody like Keeley, who is played by Juno Temple, like and Rebecca, like the boss. Like that, there's a lot of like complexity in these characters and a lot of humanity in this too. And I know we talked about Ted Lasso originally before when the first season came out. So I want to talk this with the, like a little spoiler here. So if you haven't seen the second season of Ted Lasso, just fast forward maybe like 10, 15 minutes, just so you know, to get ruined for you. Make sure you fast forward a bit, because we want to talk about the ending. We want to talk about these characters, because I really, really want to talk about the main conversation in season two has been about Nate. And has been about his progression. So Nate was the caretaker of the grounds and then got moved up to be one of the assistant coaches. And in the second season, one of the big character arcs around Nate is his slow progression into toxic masculinity. So what are your thoughts about Nate's arc in this season?
I mean, what I really like about the show is that it doesn't just fall into the easy tropes. And I know that, you know, there's some criticism that we'll unpack in and around this.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah.
But they really try to implement a lot of nuance, right? Like, I think, you know, Nate's arc, for example, if, you know, it happened and that scene with his parents in the restaurant mm-hmm. didn't happen, we'd be missing a piece of his story, right? It would mm-hmm. just be, you know, this power hungry guy turns into, you know, a villain or whatever. But then we understand a little bit of his upbringing and some of the pressures that he's had. And, you know, they subtly, it wasn't something that just got rammed over your head, but there was a lot of little scenes that they built into that to add a lot of nuance for us to unpack in and around it.
Yeah.
Now, addressing some of that criticism piece, I think, you know, one thing we have to name is there's a gross under and misrepresentation of especially Asian males mm-hmm. in a lot of Western media and culture. And so there's been, you know, an outcry and a hurt from like a Ted Lasso perspective that, oh, you chose the one South Asian guy to like represent this or whatever. But I hope, you know, we're two seasons in and the writing's been really good, that, you know, we're going to see more in season three, season four, whoever knows how long the show goes, that unpacks that further.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think Nick Mohammed, who plays Nate in Ted Lasso, he mentioned, I think even like halfway through the season where I think that episode where he yells at Colin for giving him that jersey, which was a kind of a kind statement to him, being like, hey, you're part of the team, we're just making fun, and also like, this is fun for you, right? And he just like yells at him for it in a outside of the purview of the team. There's a lot of like interesting nuances about this show that I really love, because I'm just like, Nate doesn't yell at him in the middle of everyone else. Nate yells at him privately and in a way where his power is overshadowed to the young person. It's not Colin, somebody else. Colin is the player who he also bullies as well. But at the same time, it's fascinating to me that, so going back to there's a lot of fans that were like upset about this scene. And so Nick Mohammed is like on Twitter was like, just stick it out, everyone. Don't worry. We're going to get through this together. it'll wrap up in a good way. Just stick with it. Trust me. And you know, at the end of the season, he turns out to be like, he has this really emotional conversation with Ted. And I want to talk a little bit about that conversation, because there was so much stuff layered into that conversation that I feel is very, there's a lot of like nuance about masculinity in this conversation specifically. So Ted kind of figures out that Nate, well, knows that Nate has done something behind his back. And Ted is now going to confront Nate. And he asks him, he doesn't say like, what are you doing? Who are you supposed to be? He asks very gently, I don't know what I did wrong. Please tell me what I did wrong, in that kind of tone. So, and then Nate basically, I don't know exactly what the words he said, but basically said, like, you brought me up and then you bring me down. And then you didn't lift me up as much as you wanted to, as much as I thought that you were going to. And there's all these little microaggressions that he persisted that he thought were insults to him. Like he said, he's like, yeah, I bought you a gift. You're not showing that gift. You think you're below me. I'm not. And something that you know, like, Ted wouldn't want to do this, but he just played it in his head. And then he's like, swore at him and then left. Tell me what you thought when you were watching this scene specifically.
Well, the first half of it, you know, it was really emotional. And I was like, kind of just like, you know, empathizing with Nate. And then it took a turn and he really attacked Ted. And that's kind of when I was like really turned off about it. But to your point, like, there's a lot of nuance in there where, you know, I think Ted led with vulnerability, even though he had, you know, call it ammunition to be like, hey, you did a really shitty thing. But he came and he said, listen, like, I don't think your character is the type to just do this. Like, what's underlying this? And really sought to understand.
He did.
And, you know, there was no room to be understood, right? There was no pause. It was a tirade and an exit, right? And I think that, you know, so often, you know, I had a conversation earlier today about engaging men and boys in this type of work. And the analogy that I used is, as men, we're socialized that we have a hammer and that is our only tool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in any social situation, we bring out the hammer because everything's a nail, right? And so Nate was really lacking or missing in his toolbox, you know, a wrench, a screwdriver, whatever else.
Something else.
Like,
yeah.
Fix the conversation and to like not just hammer through in anger and rage. That's all the only option he thought he had, I guess. Right. And so that was kind of what was going through my mind. And, you know, the whole time, because of this team and the journey they've been through, you're always hoping that they support each other and whatnot. And he burned the bridge.
Yeah, burned a bridge and very took it personally. And I think that's one of the things that I really took away from Nate's journey, that he took all these slights very, very personally. Even times when people were wanting to like lift him up and people were wanting to be empathetic to him. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, even in the last episode where he, you know, Ted is like, no, let's try out Nate's plan. And he took it as, we're going to try out Nate's plan because it's going to fail and you're going to blame me and I'm going to be the one, the fall guy. And you don't want that. And for in Ted's eyes, he's like, no, I'm lifting you up because it is your plan. And you're the one who's going to get the credit because it's a good plan. We're doing this because it's a good plan. It's not because I'm trying to insult you. You know what I mean? Yeah.
One thing that really struck me was Roy and like, how mad Roy was about Jamie and Keeley, right?
Right.
And then he learned that Nate kissed Keeley and just forgave him, right? Yeah. And again, like male forgiveness, these kinds of things. But Nate sits there and takes it personally. Well, you're mad at Jamie and you're not mad at me. Am I worthless? Am I nothing? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, everything was so personalized.
Yeah. And I think that's like a really good, to me, it was like a really internal lesson to say, like when it's a lesson that I think Jamie learned last season, when he's like, when Keeley told him, he's like, don't forget when people are trying to help you, like, don't turn those people away. And it's fascinating to me as well, because a lot of people talk about like Ted versus Nate. I really think about this as Jamie and Nate. And I think these two characters are progressing in a completely different way. And I thought that by the end of the episode, because they both have similar things. They both have these father issues that both of them are like pushing them both in a way that is toxic, or you could say that is dangerous. I thought at the end that maybe both of those characters, and maybe this will happen later on, that both of these characters are going to like see each other. Because it took Jamie to leave the team to basically get away from his father for him to understand, to say like, hey, I apologize for all the things that I did wrong. And he had to like take it on the chin. And not only that, he had to learn how to be apologetic, because he had to be like, you know, yeah, I remember that conversation he had with Keeley that was like, oh, I'm saying I'm sorry to these people don't forgive me. And he was mad about it. And then Keeley was like, listen, you have to actually do something. You have to actually prove it. Not just like say these things, because these people are not like, you did something terrible. And Jamie really had to like learn that lesson and learn it hard. And so I see these two characters just like on two different paths, like, and they both are so similar to me. They both are so like similar in a way that they're acting and how they're approaching life. And I'm just like, that's to me is like the main dynamic of these two people. And I'm so glad that they kind of emphasize Jamie's like progression and even his like ascension to thinking of much more of life than just himself. And also Nate's progression of thinking that life is about him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's a really interesting parallel that I actually hadn't thought of until you said it, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm fascinated that the Jamie thing wasn't like the both of them should have been talking, right? Like they should have been talking. I know it was
all in the Diamond Dogs.
Yeah. Like honestly, and Nate never took that in, right? Like it's really interesting. And it, as well too, like Jamie was the one who told Keeley that, hey, I still love you. And Nate kind of did the same thing, but in a little bit worse way. And Keeley forgave them both. But at the same time, one reacted in a way that was good. And like Jamie apologized to Roy and said, I was just very emotional. I don't mean anything bad about it. Do what you need to do. But I'm telling you that I respect you as a person. And Nate,
great growth moment for Roy there too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And Roy's moment as well too, like that comes, and I'm very interested in Roy's character too, as a lot of people are. But Nate's also one of those, like when that happened to him, he's like, no, I deserve more. I deserve to be headbutted. I deserve to be yelled at. I deserve to be, he took that as a slight. It's such a weird, weird parallel with him.
Well, I just think, you know, for me, I'm a big fan, and we've talked about this in the past as well, but like Stoic philosophy, not, you know, lowercase S stoicism within masculinity, but, you know, what is and what isn't in your control. And then also knowing that, like, you know, if something's going to happen, then you're going to react to it. Are you going to react in a way that, you know, just makes it worse? Or is it going to be in a way that makes it better some way or whatever? Right. And I just don't think that Nate has that level of emotional maturity right now. And I think there's a tough parallel, you know, for us in the world around this stuff too, right? Like bad things can happen to good people. And it really just depends on, you know, how we synthesize those things and how we act upon them. And, you know, again, to draw another parable into this, you've heard that story about you have two wolves inside you, one is good and one is bad. And it's like, which one do you feed? Right. And that's it, right? Like Jamie for a long time was feeding the wrong wolf and then, you know, got overcome and is on his redemption story. And then on the flip side right now, Nate is feeding the wrong interior dialogue. And it makes it hard to recover from that. And, you know, we know people like that in the real world as well too.
And that's what I was going to ask. Like, we know the Nates, we know the Jamies, like we know the Roys even, and we know the Teds. Like these are all kind of interesting archetypes of what masculinity is in the Western world. But it's funny because we know the Nates more, right? Like the Nates, we can see at a distance. And I'm curious on your thought, because I know that you do a lot of conversations, you do a lot of talks. Like, how do we help the Nates? Like the Nates are the ones, I think we have an understanding of how to help the Jamies. It's basically to support them and empathize them and just be there for them. And also, like, you know, you do have to call them out on their shit, but you have to ask them to work, but also you have to support them while they're calling out on their shit. But like, how do you help the Nates? Like people who are just get slighted for the things that we're trying to help you out, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting question and an important one to ask, because I think we need to be thoughtful about all these different archetypes. I think the one thing within, you know, men's quote unquote work, as we call it, is we say this is the approach and we're just going to do that, right? But we have to be adaptable. We have to be agile. We have to be intersectional, right? Like, we have to think about all these kinds of things. And when we do that, and when we synthesize it down to either a certain set of values or a certain set of principles, at least those can apply across rather than being prescriptive in and around this type of work. And again, for me, philosophy is a big piece of that. For other people, it might be faith. For some other people, it may be like, you know, some tools that they use to synthesize lived experiences. But yeah, we need to be there for the Nates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And they're the hardest people, right? They're the hardest ones to get through. I think they're the hardest. They will take more work, right? Cause I think somebody like, and I mean, like somebody like Jamie, of course, would need a lot of help as well. But I think the Jamies need community, and because they think of themselves, right? And, but the Nates need, a lot more care, because I think those people are the ones that are going to hurt you the most. Those are the ones that are, yeah.
This may be a bit of an extreme parallel, but the Nates are the incels of the world.
Oh yeah, right? For sure. They're the ones. Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, it's the Chads, it's the Stacys, it's the system, it's the I can't find connection, it's the, you know, it's this constant self-flagellation that everything is against you, right? And it's the spiral down. And that's, I think, the question is, like, how do we interrupt that? And when you find yourself at the bottom of the spiral, how do we also find a way to lift you out of it?
Right. Exactly. And that's the tough work, right? And that's the, like, when we talk about people like trying to help other guys, especially in your circle and other people that are in your circle that act this way, it's very easy to like just throw them out. And it could be very easy, and also could be very, and for some people that might be the safest thing to do. However, those people will, they're still going to be out there, you know what I mean? And without any help in the world. And so that it is something that, we need to really be aware of that. And I think you're right about the Nates being the incels. Like, you're right. Like, they're the ones that feel slighted and slighted by society. And you can tell that Nate feels slighted by society, even though he's being helped by society. It's like, it's such an interesting parallel, because for every little thing that positive that, like, as a third person, you can see it, like, this is a positive thing for you, Nate, he turns it into like, oh, someone is minimizing me, someone is silencing me, someone is insulting me. So, and that's,
well, it can't have been that bad, because he went from a second league team to West Ham United, which is an EPL fixture. And we'll put this to rest with my major issue about this whole thing. You know me, I'm an aspiring football fan. I chose West Ham as my team because they have two checks on it. And now Nate goes to West Ham as the villain. I'm devastated. Now I'm a fan of the villain's team. That's really the worst thing in all of this.
That's true. You know what? I'm a big fan of Arsenal. I think it would have been appropriate if you went to Arsenal. it would have made a lot of sense. Yeah, I'm sorry that he went to a West Ham team. I'm very curious about the next season, because they have like all the rights now, like the Premier League rights. And like, I wonder if they'll bring in like Premier League players to actually like be a part of the show now. So I'm very curious.
And just to end on a down note, if folks want to see something awesome, and we'll link this in the show notes, there's a video of the cast of Ted Lasso going to an EPL game and not being recognized when they're interviewed, because this must have been like season one. Yes, and they are having a time together. It just seems like a really great place to work and tell stories together. So that's the uplifting video you should go check out.
Absolutely. Go check it out. And the last thing I want to say is that I think it was noted before, the acting of Nick Mohammed, the acting of Brett Goldstein, and obviously they all got Emmys, Juno Temple, like Jason Sudeikis, amazing, amazing work. Like, especially like I said, Nick Mohammed in his last speech with Ted, like, I was like, when I watched it, I was like, oh, wait, did Ted actually do something? Like, I felt it in my bones. I was like, wait, did I miss something too? Like, and I was like, oh no, wait, this is just really good work from him. And shout out to the whole group. I'm so excited for season 3. I'm so sad the season's over. So if you have any more things to say or any more things to say about Ted Lasso, throw it in the comments. We'd love to have a good conversation about Ted Lasso. Join our circle. There's already a conversation that's going on with Ted Lasso. So you could just add on to what's going on there. And yeah, we'll regroup when season 3 comes out.
Where maybe that's the future direction here, just a Ted Lasso podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
with a masculinity lens.
That'll be good. I'm so happy that show exists, because then I think it also adds a lot of people talking about masculinity in general, and it's in a different way, instead of being like, you know, oh, there was a murder and this is where we're talking about masculinity again. So it's like, that's always important to talk about, but it's always good to talk about this thing.
This episode of Modern Manhood is brought to you by Taproot Edmonton, which publishes curiosity-driven stories, topical newsletters, and locally focused podcasts, all in the service of informing Edmontonians about their community. Taproot publishes a weekly healthy innovation roundup, which shares the latest news on research, technologies, companies, and people changing healthcare for the better in Edmonton and in Alberta. So if you want to subscribe to Taproot, please subscribe to the Health Roundup for free at taprootedmonton.ca. That's again, taprootedmonton.ca. And this episode is also brought to you by Pod Power. And with Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Alberta and Alberta podcasters. So in this episode, the Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout out to High Level Hip Hop. So CJSR presents High Level Hip Hop. CJSR is the radio from the University of Alberta, and it's a deep dive into Edmonton's hip hop scene and the artists help shaping it. The show takes a unique approach to introducing listeners to the OGs and the young bloods of Edmonton's hip hop scene. So the show is aimed at those who love local music but might not have the chance to fall in love with the city's surprisingly diverse hip hop scene. So each episode features an interview with a local artist, plus a fresh track they recorded at CJSR themselves. Check out episodes of Arlo Maverick, Please Be Nice, and more throughout the season. High Level Hip Hop is produced by CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. And you can download it wherever you found podcasts, or you can go to highlevelhiphop.transistor.fm. So that's highlevelhiphop.transistor.fm. Just look for High Level Hip Hop.
Speaking of tough things to talk about, because we're going to move into something a little bit more serious and real. So let's talk about this article that you posted on our circle. It's from the New York Times. It's called "Hello, This is Colombia's Anti-Machismo Hotline." So the byline here, it says a new hotline in Bogota takes calls from men struggling with jealousy, control, and fear, and challenges long-held assumptions about masculinity. So first of all, was this a... I know you posted it because you thought it was really cool. You thought it was like an interesting thing. But were you like, damn, like we should have been doing this too. Like, men should have been having a hotline.
Well, two things. Well, maybe three things. Okay. First of all, if we had a hotline, we'd have to get Drake on board for hotline.
Absolutely, later. Yes.
Second thing, the person who actually sent it to me was Rachel Giza, who who wrote the book "Boys: What It Means to Become a Man." That cool. Next Gen Men is featured in one of the chapters, and she also wrote the article that inspired us to start Next Gen Men. So,
yeah.
You know, great that Rachel's still thinking of us, and I told her to keep sending things my way.
That's awesome.
But the third thing that caught my interest about this is I'm actually advising on a project in Alberta with the Calgary Women's Emergency Shelter called Men And, which is going to come out in November. And there is a dedicated hotline and there is a dedicated chat with counseling on the other side. And so, you know, for me, reading this piece was very inspiring because so I have a background in international development. That's my degree. And I lived in Brazil for a time doing this work. You know, we have this perception in North American Western culture that, you know, we're advanced and the rest of the world is behind and we need to save them and blah, 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 all that stuff.
White saviorism.
Exactly. I was stoked to see this happening and thriving in a place like Colombia. And Latin America, rather, even, you know, a place that has, you know, we were talking off the hop, the conversation where is evolving beyond toxic masculinity here. But the conversation is still very much around machismo, which is the equivalent in Latin America. And so I just found it super inspiring for, you know, what we're embarking on trying to build here, and knowing that it is working. And I also think just to counter a narrative where people think that men are doing this unconsciously, that they don't think about it, that they're not worried about it, that it doesn't bother them, to have a hotline where it's a really vulnerable thing to pick up a phone and call and say, I'm thinking about hitting my partner, or I have, what do I do? Yeah. Or, you know, I'm jealous when she tells me about her work colleague or something like that, right? That's a very vulnerable thing to do. And so all of it was just super inspiring. What did you think?
I loved it. I think that's like, I've been listening to, obviously I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's interesting to me that a lot of ads lately have been for these kind of online therapy, like companies. There's a bunch of companies out there that provide these kind of like, just take your phone and you type to a therapist and away you go. And I think that's interesting in the sense that, like, you know, mental health should be more accessible, and hopefully it's cheaper than going to see a therapist because you're kind of typing in. I love this idea just because it's more directive. It is more like this is exactly what we're talking about, because I think, and it shows actually with men's work and men's spaces, that men do understand, for the most part, do understand that there's something off, that sometimes they might not know what it is and they need some sort of solution. And this is a good way of doing this, of helping this out. Because the idea is not just like the line is not called anti-machismo hotline. It's called the calm line. And it's simple. It's a very simple process. It's a very simple thought process. And it's very easy to just say, I'm going to call the calm line because I want to feel calm, right? And it has nothing to do with either their perception of masculinity or even just like trying to like pinpoint to like a specific, like their own perception of masculinity. It's basically enhancing their perception of masculinity in a way that, hey, you know what? I hear this a lot from feminist spaces and also people who do a lot of anti-violence work. It has nothing to do with like taking down their perception of masculinity. It's enhancing their ethics and beliefs. Like, hey, you know that violence is not it's not ethical. You know that this is against your values. Let's talk about that. Let's go into your values instead of away from them. And so it kind of enhances their own humanity instead of taking that away, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, it gives you agency within your own experience of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you are just painted as a perpetrator or a potential perpetrator, you don't feel like you have a lot of agency, right? Mm-hmm. And so how are we actually engaging in those moments and capturing that fear in and around that? And, you know, we talk about this a lot. It's hurt people that hurt people. Nobody grows up wanting to be violent, to harm others, to not feel safe and secure in their relationship. So, you know, how can we get in touch with that hurt child underneath and give them a voice in that moment to say, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to continue doing what I've just done.
Yeah, totally. And I'm just reading through as well too, like, you know, it shows that there's a quote here that says men are calling to the calm line through a rate of a dozen a day. That's pretty, really good. knowing that I work in a place that has like a call line feature to it, I think that's pretty, pretty good. It's also interesting that this is a government agency. This is a government agency doing this. This is not a startup or some random person. This is like a government agency looking at the problem, looking at the issues. Well, it was elevated by a lot of social work and social justice movements happening in those areas. we have to give credit to them as well too. But also, like, it's really interesting. This is initiated by government agencies. Is that this is a government program? You know,
I think it's great. I mean, I wish that we celebrated more of those government initiatives. Right, like we hear this all the time. You know, I don't live in Alberta anymore, but you still do, right? It's a conservative province, and they're always talking about taxes and what that's used towards, right? But when I hear something like this, hey, we're using government taxes to eliminate violence before it happens, right? I'm like, that's cool. I could never do that, right? A private enterprise could never do that. So, and you know, as much as you were saying earlier, it's great to hear about these platforms and these apps making mental health supports more accessible. It's also eroding the value that, you know, a lot of therapists put in around this, right? Like you and I have joked before about, you know, coaches and how much life coaches cost and those kinds of things. So, you know, we can't erode actual mental health supports. So, you know, there is a human capital cost. And just to add another layer to it, the reason we shout out our Next Gen members on the front end, right? Like our single largest expense as an organization is the people behind it, the people who connect with the other people, who have the stories, the agility, the principles to have those really difficult conversations. And so I think it's great to see the recognition of that.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think that I think psychologists and counselors have already been thinking about this and talking about this. It's great to have that backing of it. And it's also nice to be able to think about this through a gendered lens, especially with men. I know there's men's groups do exist, especially with other counselors. Like counseling groups do men's group, and mostly honestly pretty popular. I think a lot of men are out there kind of looking for that kind of sense of community and sense of calm in their own life. So I don't know, I think it's great. And I hope it continues. And I hope that, like, the initiative that you're talking about, I hope that comes to fruition. And I'm very curious of how this will end up in the end. Or hopefully this is something that takes off. You know what I mean? So,
And one other thing to highlight that I really loved about this calm line is the intersectional approach of it as well, too, right? It doesn't care what your sexuality is or your gender identity. They were telling a story about how a man called in because he was having a hard time with a breakup with another man, right? And the relationship around that, and didn't have places to talk about that, as well as a transgender male talking about their experiences, you know, coming into what their expectations of what it is to be a man and whatnot. So I think there's a lot of stuff to learn from and be excited about in this story.
Yeah. And I'll say personally as well, like I said, I do work in a space where we do get, I do get people calling into to us and talking about their own problems, their own concerns. And I do hear this a lot. And I really want to shout out like the people who are in the front lines of social justice, because they have kind of liberated this notion of intersectionality, but also the notion of masculinity and gender to be a word that now people can just say without feeling that it's like this weird word that nobody understands. It's like nebulous word. In obviously in Latin America, machismo is very much something that before, and I would say as a Latino, it's something that maybe people were kind of a little bit proud of, a little bit like, oh, we have machismo there. It's just something that happens in Latin America, blah, blah, blah. But now it's something that they believe it's a major concern. And it's something that, and I'm just reading in the article, just saying like, hey, they're actually labeling this themselves, that this is machismo. And again, this is due to the work that has been done by a lot of people in the social justice movement to say, so machismo is something that we should be battling against. This shouldn't be something that we just say it's the status quo. And this happens in Alberta, this happens in Canada, this happens in all kind of nations that saying, you know what, enough is enough. So again, shout out to people who are pushing this, shout out to you know, the Colombian government to giving this kind of a shot, just being like, hey, let's just try something that's a little bit out there and just putting some public money into it. And shout out to the people and the men who are calling that line as well. And so kudos to you to making that step, and to anybody who's making that step to calling them, to calling counselors and to calling mental health therapists, and working on you, because that's important as well. So anything else to say about that?
Oh, well said.
Okay, awesome. The last thing that I wanted to talk about, and you actually brought this up, and it's funny because I posted this on Instagram as well, and I thought this was really cool. Jonah Hill. First of all, what are your thoughts on Jonah Hill? Like before, let's talk about like 5 years ago. What was your thoughts on Jonah Hill like 5-10 years ago? Like, did you watch Superbad?
I did.
Did you watch Knocked Up?
Yeah. I mean, so I just thought, you know, every generation is kind of graced with these funny guys that like will say or do anything to be funny. And he was fucking funny.
Yeah, right? He was.
Like, made me laugh a lot. But we've also seen like really tragic ends to a lot of those guys, right? Yeah. Like John Candy.
John Belushi, you know, people like that. Yeah.
Exactly, right? Even Jim Carrey struggled with his mental health, Robin Williams, et cetera. Different types of humor all through that. But yeah, I think that, you know, Jonah Hill was definitely carving out a career and a space around a specific type of humor, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the reason why I asked that question was because Jonah Hill, for me, in the last, I would say 5 years or even shorter than that, 3 years or so, has become one of my favorite celebrities, I would say, in the sense that he is very much just authentically himself and very much a person that is willing and vulnerable enough to say what I'm doing should be investigated, but also what I'm doing, I am putting up specific boundaries of who I am, and I kind of love it. So specifically, can you tell me a little bit more about this article that you posted?
Yeah, I mean, the most recent example, and you know, I saw it originally that he was featured in GQ, right? And I grew up in, I think it was like university. I actually had a GQ subscription for a bit.
I did too.
Some pretty good stories. You know, so getting a GQ kind of feature piece is a big deal. And you know, he looks great, right? And you contrast that with like maybe the image you have in your mind of this, you know, overweight, obnoxious, super bad character, and you're like, oh, like, are those even the same person, right? Type of things. And because of the GQ piece, I guess there was a big, I'm not the best at like pop culture and media always, but like, I guess there was a big conversation about the weight he'd lost and how good he looked and these kinds of things. And so this piece here was from actually an opinion piece on, I believe, MSNBC from Liz Plank, author of For the Love of Men. And she talks about how he came out after all of this hubbub about his weight loss and asked people to stop talking about it, similar to the vein of a Jamila Jamil or an Adele, and those kinds of conversations. And I think what Liz did in this piece that was really interesting was talking about how, also shout out to upcoming Next Gen Men's Circle on the male gaze next week, so definitely check that out. But how this, you know, male gaze and perception of masculinity has made it okay to objectify and talk about women's health and bodies and looks and those kinds of things. And now it's transferring to men as well too,
yep.
Right? Because we didn't nip it in the bud, it is now being applied to men and around this as well. And so Liz, I think, did a really good job of teasing that out. But yeah, essentially, you know, Jonah Hill, to your point, boundaries, didn't want people to talk about his body or his looks.
Yep. He specifically said in Instagram, and I've heard this from him before, and I think Liz actually shows a couple of clips about it. He said, "I know you mean well, but I kindly ask that you not comment on my body. Good or bad, I want to politely let you know that it's not helpful and doesn't feel good. Much respect." And I really empathize with this. Not even empathize. I sympathize it in a sense that I have personalized this because I feel like the sense of like that body shame that happens sometimes with a lot of guys. I felt a lot of body. I still feel sometimes a little bit of body shame. And so I totally understand where Jonah Hill comes from. And I think it has to do with him being a bigger person and the sense of like like eyes on him and people just constantly talking about his weight. Or I know that there was, I remember one time this interview he did where he talked about like, oh, like it was a joke about him smelling. And he said, he's like, I think it was to Jimmy Kimmel. He was like, don't talk about like, was that supposed to be a joke? Like, I don't think that joke's funny. Like, and I think he talked to another interview being like, I don't understand why you keep talking about this stuff. Like, he's been very, very good in the last few years, just shutting down interviews and comments about his weight and just saying, these are not jokes. This is leading to somewhere that I don't want to go. It does speak to his privilege that he can do these things as a guy specifically. And I think he's very well aware of that as well. However, it is really, really awesome to think about him as a person putting up these boundaries and people just kind of respecting that and really just like thinking about this positively. And like, again, like I've been really like invested in his celebrity, he's just his career. Just moving from like movies like Superbad and Knocked Up and things like that, to doing things like Mid-90s, which really explores, like, he directed that and he made that. And he explores his like youth and his life living as a skater person. And I don't know. Have you seen that movie? Have you seen Mid-90s?
Not yet. It's on my to watch list.
You should watch it. It's really good. It is tough. It's definitely like a boys movie. And it talks about like youth in a really honest way. Yeah, I really like that movie a lot. And yeah, just even things like he did, even he was kind of a jokey, but like his progression in Moneyball, you've seen Moneyball, right? Yeah. Like he does an amazing job in Moneyball, and like even things like Wolf of Wall Street and even things like other movies where he's just branching out into a way that just makes him more nuanced, more complex. And things like that just give me a lot of admiration to what Jonah Hill is and what Jonah Hill does. Yeah.
And I think it's important, you know, for us to also, you know, to throw in some gender theory in and around this. This is why we mm-hmm. talk about multiple masculinities, right?
Yeah,
and not
absolutely.
Talking about a singular masculinity and putting people in boxes. And another example, again, not necessarily body image related, is Matthew McConaughey, right? We saw early on in his career, he was typecast as the rom-com guy. And there's, you know, a story about him turning down a $14 million rom-com because he didn't want to be that guy anymore. He wanted to broaden his acting horizons and chops and character types and those kinds of things. So I think, you know, it's great to have those role models in and around that. And I think, you know, so it is a bit under discussed how body image affects men. You know, I know for myself, even though I was athletic growing up, you know, puberty hits and you can't control what your body's doing. Totally. And I was really self-conscious. And then, you know, I played semi-professional sports and, you know, I always looked at myself in the mirror and I thought, oh, I can't jump high enough. I can't run fast enough. I'm not strong enough. And, you know, now I'm in my mid 30s and I'm an old fart and I look at pictures of myself from back then and I'm like, holy shit.
I was the same thing. I look back at pictures when I was in high school, and in high school, I always felt like crap. I felt like it's like I was the biggest person. And I look at myself and I was like, what were you on, Herman? Like, you were the best shape of your life. I didn't understand what you were talking about. I wish I had that sort of self-confidence to just look in the mirror and say, you're okay. You're doing fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, again, acknowledging our privilege in and around this, we live in a society where, like, you know, dad bods are permissible. We can look up and see CEOs and heads of state that are, you know, not in the best shape and those kinds of things. Imagine being a young girl or a woman who is constantly shown what it is, like what kind of body type you have to be successful and whatnot in and around this. So I think it's an important conversation. I'm glad that Jonah Hill is evolving and is allowing us to have the conversation about male gender body perception, but also, you know, showing that he can be more than just a stereotype.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's his big push, is to be more than just a stereotype and more than just like this funny guy or this fat guy even. And so good for him for sticking his neck out, because it is a second, like, I mean, as much as he is a celebrity and as much as he can insulate himself, it's very much a good way to stick his neck out in a way that it's really important. And All power to him. And it's interesting to think about those people that were in those movies too. And maybe this is a different conversation and maybe we don't have to have it right away, but like, I'm just thinking about like, have you, like I looked at, because I followed Jonah Hill, like it took me to Seth Rogen's Instagram. Do you know what Seth Rogen is doing right now? Pottery. He's really big into pottery. All I see,
I saw that.
All I see on his Instagram is he does a lot of pottery and he shows it off and he does a lot of ceramics. And I'm just like, damn it, Seth Rogen. It's like, I'm just like, this is so cool to see like these people that you have this one perception of this being these funny guys, these goofy guys, probably smoke a lot of weed. It's like this. And then to be like, no, I'm just going to do pottery. You know, like Jonah Hill is like, I'm just going to do surfing. That's my thing now. And it's really interesting to like, to see these kind of progression of the people that I had these specific ideas about, you know, like even like Jay Baruchel, like Canadian Jay Baruchel, he's doing his own thing, just like doing his own types of movies, different types of movies, different types of ideas. You know, like even things like in Letterkenny, like he's a big part of that too. Like, so yeah, it's just fascinating to see that group just like mature and change and just like you said, like really be authentically their own selves, you know?
Yeah. I think as well too, the question that I'm left with, yes, I want to celebrate that, but do you have to get to a celebrity status to be able to break out of that shell too, right?
And I think that's
something that so many guys struggle with, is like, they don't feel like they have the license wherever they're at in their lives, whether it be power, privilege, money, whatever, to go to a pottery class say, I'm not that guy anymore, those kinds of things. So,
Curious. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think that because we live in a capitalist society, that money does give you that kind of freedom of sticking out for yourself, unfortunately. However, I think we are in a place where we are changing those things. And I think going to a pottery class or learning how to surf is a little bit more accessible than it used to be. And I think those communities are out there if you wanted to do that. And I think that there's a lot more people accepting to do things like pottery or to do things that maybe might not be considered quote unquote unmasculine, which is a bullshit word. But at the same time, it's really cool to see just people just generally doing that, you know, like I think, I used to think like those things could be very like revolutionary and like transgressive and stuff like that. But I'm also like, these things are also just normal, like just normal life. And then, and I think people don't need to like completely show off. And I think like Seth Rogen is not showing off. He's just like, hey, this is what I like. This is what I'm doing. I'm just going to show it to you just because I think it's cool. Instead of being like, I'm being a different type of man. Like it's not the way he's approaching it. And I don't think people should be approaching it that way. I think just do it the way that you feel is authentic. And hey, if you like playing basketball, playing sports or things that are quote unquote masculine, that's fine too. That's the whole point of multiple masculinities, is that these things can both exist and they don't have to compete with each other. You know what I mean?
As long as it doesn't hurt you or other people around you, it's all valid.
Exactly.
To leave it on one last Instagram Reels inspirational quote, if it makes you happy, it doesn't have to make sense to anyone else.
Exactly. Great place to end. This has been another good episode of Cold Takes. Thanks so much for joining, Jake. I appreciate your time and stepping in as well.
Always a pleasure. It's big shoes to fill with Samantha and Veronica. Hopefully I did well. But always love Cold Takes.
Yeah, we'll talk to them. They can give us the reviews for that.
We're just gonna get torched in the comments, aren't we?
Exactly. Bunch of white guys doing podcasts again.
What a stereotype we are.
Total stereotype. All right, everyone. So have a wonderful week. There's gonna be a new episode of Modern Manhood popping up at the end of this month. One that we're working on right now that it's really really cool. It's about sports. And then we'll have one more episode left and then that's it. That'll be end for the season. So hopefully stick around to that. There's going to be some really cool guests for that show as well too. Don't forget to check out other podcast shows like Breaking the Boy Code and Reka Beluda, because I think that they're also winding up their seasons as well too. So Yeah, make sure you do that. And if you're already listening, if you're listening to this through the Modern Manhood feed, don't forget to donate and join Next Gen Men as well too. So you can do that through nextgenmen.ca/join. And then you can donate or even just join our circle. Make sure you do that because there's a lot of cool conversations happening there. But yeah, any other things that you want to plug, Jake?
If people just want the goods in their inbox, they should sign up for our newsletter, futureofmasculinity.com.
Awesome. Yeah, please do that. There's awesome articles. I previewed one that's just coming out soon. You're going to want to hear it, or you're going to want to read it, is what I'm trying to say. Anyways, have a wonderful week, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time on More Manhood, Old Takes.